This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 58, Boggy Creek 2. The legend continues.
Yes, actually, funny enough, as you said, this is Boggy Creek 2 and The Legend Continues, mm-hmm. also known as The Barbaric Beast of Boggy Creek 2. However, it's a sequel to a film called The Legend of Boggy Creek, which came out in 1972. This film was made 13 years later in 1985. Bit of an odd duck, I would say.
Yes.
Or should I say an odd...
I feel like I should be making a duck call right now.
Well, I was going to say an odd, like, you know, paleontologic monster, or whatever, an odd beast of some sort.
Yes, an odd beast. Captain Ahab had his white whale. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lockhart had his white trash, I guess. This is like, this is a quest of sorts. This is a University of Arkansas professor mm-hmm. known as Dr. Lockhart. Mm-hmm. And he's
almost an existential quest in a sense.
Yes. Because, as these movies typically start, there's legend. Legend has it that there's this beast, there's this creature that's been inhabiting the swamps of Arkansas mm-hmm. and Louisiana. And its legend precedes itself, and who better to track it down than this University of Arkansas paleontologist who sports short shorts, University of Arkansas like odd like ball caps, and who brandishes, as you said, a limp-wristed pistol at various times through the
film. Like a
little
tiny Derringer. Yeah.
This is lensed in Texarkana.
Well, this is bizarre. I mean, because I got to tell you, this movie is made by Charles B. Pierce, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, he is, in my estimation, a great filmmaker because of The Town That Dreads Sundown.
Yes.
Which is a film that you and I both hold in very high esteem.
Yes.
Excellent.
Excellent slasher that arguably could be held in the same esteem as Texas Chainsaw.
It just didn't
have the same push. It was filmed in Texarkana as well, and has one of the most, if not the most incredible horror movie deaths of all time. Yeah. A trombone knife death.
You got it.
It's sensational, and everyone has to check it out. Not so much the remake.
Yeah, you got this killer who was wearing like a burlap sack, to cover his identity. And
very KKK.
KKK, and also that influenced the look of Jason in Friday the 13th Part 2. You know, the quote-unquote sackhead Jason. But he started his career with The Legend of Boggy Creek, which I will admit I have not seen.
No.
So I can't tell you what the continuity is between Boggy
Creek. Or whether
Creek.
The legend actually did, in fact, continue.
Yeah. But, I mean, Pierce also made another movie called The Evictor, which was another sort of underseen gem.
It's about a sleazy landlord or what?
It starred Jessica Harper, who I really I like from Femme of the Paradise and Suspiria, and then he made this as I said before, 13 years later, this odd sequel to Boggy Creek called again The Barbaric Beast of Boggy Creek or Boggy Creek 2 and The Legend Continues.
Boggy Creek 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo, there you go. This movie, it's on the bottom 100 on IMDb. Reason being is because Mystery Science 3000 lambasted it, lampooned it, destroyed it. It seems to me that whenever Mystery Science Theater 3000 decides to take the piss out of a movie, all of a sudden it just automatically plummets to the bottom 100 on IMDb. People just say, yep, the movie's a piece of crap. This is, I'm not going to say it's a piece of crap. I'm going to say it's an odd duck. It's a weird movie, but...
Yeah, that's a good segue there with, you know, ducks, which are frequently hunted. There's Ducks Unlimited, of course, the nature organization looking to preserve them. But in the first scene, we see a deer that gets pulled under the water, which I think might be in Sulphur Creek, or is it Sulphur River? I forget what it is, but this is part of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. This deer meets its demise in the opening scene, and it's almost like... like a weird, this film has an odd tone. It's almost like a cross between a nature film, David Attenborough. You know, the southwestern cockatoo inhabits the eastern regions of Florida. But it's like a travelogue mixed with a PBS documentary with a weird voiceover.
Yeah,
it makes no sense at all from a horror perspective.
It's funny too because I mean, like the way it starts off, like it's very pastoral. Mm. You know, you sort of see the. The swamps and everything is nice and calm, and you hear the chirping of the birds, and, you know, the various wildlife and everything. And then there's a deer, and he's, you know, grazing, and all of a sudden this hairy hand reaches out of the water, pulls it in, and the next thing you see is water gurgling with blood, and the beheaded carcass of this deer, and then goes right back to the pastoral sort of music and scene. So, very interesting way of sort of beginning this movie.
Yeah, as we know from Wes Craven's Swamp Thing, you know, what lurks below in the methane depths of this south, you know, southern United States swamp, there's something, you know, untoward lurking below.
Yep. So, I mean, we go from serene to violent to serene, and the next thing we know, it's Friday Night Lights. I mean, it's a high school football game, right? 75,000 people there watching this.
Friday. Well, this is a university football game, but still, like they in the southern United States, for those who don't know, they live and breathe fucking pigskin, and Arkansas is no exception. University of Arkansas Razorbacks, one of the most heralded programs in the states, and you know, I guess Dr. Lockhart is it? He's
Dr.
taking
Lockhart,
in a game. He's a professor at this university, and he's cheering on his team, and. Yeah, I guess his assistant gets wind of this weird death, and he summons the professor from the, because this is so important that he has to drag him from this, you know, university football game. And his assistant is what? His name is Tim. He's a shirtless, frequently shirtless undergraduate who assists the good professor.
Yeah, hilariously enough, I mean, this is funny because... before we continue, I should say that Professor Lockhart is actually played by Charles B. Pierce.
The director,
the writer, the producer. You know, there's sort of a rule of thumb of cinema, Chris. They say if the same person both writes, directs, stars, and scores in a movie,
it's bad,
you know? And so Pierce plays Lockhart, and he casts his own son as... Tim, and I mean, this guy is more often shirtless than not.
Yeah.
You'd think he was Lou Bloody Ferrigno.
Yeah.
This is a skinny, scrawny, you know,
farmer tanned 80s heartthrob.
Yeah. Professor Lockhart, I guess, you know, doesn't have to teach any classes. He's
got
nothing on the go, so he just gets up and goes with Tim, Tanya, and Lynn. He brings these two girls along as well.
Yeah, and then one of the reasons unexplained, one of them is tenuously connected to the university, I think, and the other one is just a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, just like, you'd figure, you know, I don't know much about, you know, academics. It's been a while since I've been in university, but from what I know about scholarship, you set a hypothesis, you test it, and you see if your presumptions match the data. And this guy has... this undergrad in tow with him, and he's got these people who have nothing to do with anthropology or research in any way. And we should also say that he presumes that this beast exists already, which is pretty funny. Like, usually you'd have a sort of a distance, dispassionate,
healthy,
skeptical nature
when it comes to this.
There's
a Bigfoot-like creature roaming the woods.
A priori, he just accepts that there's a Bigfoot creature. And what's funny about this is obviously, like, films of this ilk, they frequently question the hubris and the presumptiveness of scientists, so they go into town him and his unorthodox crew, and
yeah,
they load the jeep and head into the backwoods,
Texarkana,
yeah,
which is where the town that Dread Sundown was
lensed. Yeah. Yeah, and they meet all these hillbillies. I forget whether it was in a bar or a local diner.
Well, they go
and they say, I guess it was a general store, and they go, oh, can you tell us about the legend?
Well, they want to buy some ammunition, of course.
Yeah,
this is a south, so of course you got some ammunition, yes. Right?
And they inquire about the nature of this beast, and these guys who are just backwoods denizens, just, you know, inbred hillbillies, mm-hmm. they laugh at this guy.
Yeah.
And they say, like, and they call him, which is funny because everything is relative. We're podcasting from a city of 4 million people, right, in the northeast of North America. This guy from Arkansas is considered like a city slicker.
Right. I was going to say, because, I mean, Dr. Lockhart, as far as I'm concerned,
is
much of a hick as you get, and yet to these, you know, backwood denizens of Texarkana, he is a city slicker.
Well, Bill Clinton came from Little Rock, Arkansas, and he was a city slicker, I guess.
Yeah, they're
intellectual. Yeah.
There ain't no monster
city folk. Yeah.
It's a tourist trap, right? Yeah. City folk. And what I found quite hilarious is they kept on cutting the shots of Ambie Davis. It wasn't Ambie Davis. We know Ambie Davis was the housekeeper on the Brady Bunch.
Yes.
There was this woman in the general store that is just kind of shocked.
Yeah, she was just there.
For reacting. Yeah. Really, like, and yeah, so they go out looking for this creature, and, I mean, Dr. Lockhart keeps regaling his young charge with stories of the creature, you know, sightings that happened 20 years ago.
Although it's laid dormant since, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Which, you know, they keep showing little flashbacks here and there to these sightings and anecdotes, really. And
yeah, nothing says a professorship and scholarship like regaling people with conjecture in lieu of science.
Exactly.
Do you have any peer-reviewed papers he could research? Or, like, someone who, like, scanned the swamp with some sort of sonar detector? No, nothing. Like Loch Ness or something. You just go in, a priori, assume the thing is there, enlist the help of three people who have no research in his field whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
take a jeep, and set up camp in a what was it, a mobile home or some sort of...
It was a jeep with some weird sort of, like, camper behind it.
Like a trailer on it. Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because at one point they're kind of driving down the road, and he slams on the brakes, I would say about a half mile away from the dead deer.
The dead deer,
that we saw in the very opening scene, but it was a half a mile away, and he slams on the brakes to swerve to avoid hitting this deer.
The dead deer, yeah.
Yeah, and... They
drag the roadkill off the road and dunk it in the bushes somewhere.
And of course, Lockhart says to his research assistant Tim, let's go, you know, check out the deer. Girls, stay in the car. And this is like a repeated motif throughout the movie. Girls,
stay in the car. Tim. Yeah,
stay in the car. Stay there. You know, you're too feminine for this.
Yeah,
Which begs the question: why did he bring them along? What purpose?
Why did he bring the guy along? He's a freshman. He knows nothing. But yeah, anyway, he needed the company.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess in this cabin. So they take up refuge in this cabin, and
this is bizarre.
This I didn't see coming.
Yeah,
they get. They get set upon by a rabid German shepherd.
Yeah.
And
who's frothing at the mouth.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it turns into the Night of the Living Dead, where they pull up in this cabin, and this dog is trying to get their way in, and they're shooting their way out. He's rabid, he's bloody, he's vicious, and...
Yeah, they're trying to bar the door, but the dog, you know, is a pretty clever canine. Mm-hmm. It gains access to their dilapidated cabin by going under the floorboards. So, you know, they expend several rounds of ammunition trying to shoot at this Cerberus, trying to kill them. And then it emerges through the floorboards, and, you know, Dr. Lockhart's run out of ammo. But luckily, his young freshman research assistant has a shotgun. And takes the dog out right there, right in front of a cowering Dr. Lockhart.
And we gotta say,
that was, like, really crazy.
When Lockhart is, you know, pouncing into action like a, you know, freaking Indiana Jones. I mean, this guy is wearing this ridiculous red baseball cap.
The Arkansas logo.
Flaming red T-shirt, short cutoff jean shorts, and, like, athletic socks hiked up to his knees.
To his knees, yeah.
And, you know, all of a sudden, this is the action star. Bizarre.
Yeah.
But hey, the search continues.
And yeah, and equally bizarre is there the equipment that they employ to try and find this thing. It's some sort of, it's like a radar, like a MASH kind of sonar unit. Mm-hmm. And it, for some reason, unexplained, like they got this computer and you can input the data for the specifications of the size of the whatever creature, yep, and the weight, the size and the height and the weight of whoever you're trying to find. And you input this, which probably prompts the question, why not set your computer to detect anything over 40 pounds? But he sort of manually inputs like 100. One scene is hilarious. He says, I estimate this creature to be 300 pounds. And then he types in 300 pounds and 6'5"? Like he's a WWE wrestler or something. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really establish how they set this equipment up. But they have these what do you call it? Like from Swamp Thing, these detectors.
Sonar type, whatever.
Yeah, these things that they've put out at different, out in the woods to detect motion. And it doesn't really say how this is done, and I don't know.
Yeah, so it's funny. So he says, I'm going to detect anything over 300 pounds, and nothing comes up. Okay, well, let's change your parameters to 400 pounds. All of a sudden, beep, 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 beep. There's a creature, and it's coming towards us. Now,
what do we do? Yeah.
When we see this creature, now, this is like this Bigfoot-esque monster, who sort of looks like, you were describing it as some sort of like man
in a gorilla
suit.
It's like the gorilla suit, costumes that adorn, people who are promoting like a
used car dealership.
Or the opening of some like electronics store.
Now I don't know. I mean, what stuntman or extra or why not they got off the street that they can script it put into this gorilla costume? But he did not even look like he weighed half of 400 pounds. Yeah. I mean, he looked about 120 pounds soaking wet. But meanwhile, we're supposed to assume this creature's 400 pounds. And not only that, there's not one of them. There's two of them.
Yeah, because I guess the creature, the Boggy Creek creature, has an offspring. Mm. Obviously, it reproduces, which is something they never really got into with Loch Ness. If there's only one, I guess they only would see one at a time. Were they male? Were they female? Whatever.
That begs the question. I mean, if there was an offspring, where was a mother?
That's not explained.
Is it such an asexual
divine providence?
I don't know, man. Yeah. Okay. And again, we have the and we got the women in tow, and they're cowardly, and they're like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen?" And Dr. Lockhart says, "Let me tell you something right now. I don't think I promised anyone a picnic on this trip."
No.
So definitely not a picnic.
They did not get their promised picnic.
No.
And now I guess I don't recall exactly what happens, but I think the beast absconds into the woods. Maybe they shoot at it.
Well, that's the thing.
Or they put a dart into it.
So they're camped. The beast,
a tranquilizer dart.
This beast that they this mythological beast that does he exist? Does he not exist? There he is. He's in front of them.
But they have no camera.
They have no camera. They have nothing to document the evidence that this beast exists. It's like,
well, they already a priori accept that it exists.
Right.
So this is dodgy science.
There you go, man.
They have no documentation.
I have witnessed, it's like if I go to Loch Ness, see a Loch Ness monster, but oh shit, I forgot my fucking iPhone at home with a camera. They have nothing to prove. So all it does is shoot a trank dart into it, which, the beast shakes off.
Yeah, and he admits it's ineffectual too, which also prompts the question, and the professor says, "Oh, he probably just took it out and threw it aside." I forget his exact words, which prompts the question: if you're seeking a 400-pound creature, why not accommodate its size with the amount of tranquilizer you put in your fucking dart?
This was not a very well planned scientific excursion expedition at all. This is not Lewis and Clark or anything like that.
This expedition was, this was more along the lines of Deliverance in the canyon.
I would say so. So after they come face to face with this monster, this beast, this mythological, evolutionary link,
The missing link.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, of course, with nothing to document that day, there he is. Yeah. He exists. Dr. Lockhart says, "Well, everyone was so shaken about that encounter, I decided to tell him a lighter story."
Yeah.
And he tells a story.
Now, you're going to have to explain this to me, because I'm not sure I got it. He tells this apocryphal tale about a guy in an outhouse.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that had to do with anything. Was that supposed to be funny? Like,
I think it was, yeah.
Folksy
sort of. So what happened was, there was this guy. So guys, I mean, you know, I know you're scared. We just saw this, you know, this ravenous,
that nearly killed us,
carnivorous beast. But let me tell you a story about him that might make you a little,
temper the
chuckle or two. Yeah. So, you know, there was this guy, and he was looking for a Sears catalog one day to go to the outhouse to take a fucking shit.
Yeah, and his missus supplies him with the Sears Roebuck catalog, which is resplendent with 1980s women sporting various brassieres.
Yes.
So he goes to the outhouse ostensibly to, I guess, you know,
take a shit and something.
Take a shit and maybe something else.
There
he's
go.
Got the you know, the pages open to this lascivious magazine.
And
this is so ridiculous.
And then as he's
doing his business.
You know, the hirsute hand of this creature just like breaks in the outhouse, and this man shoots his pants.
Yeah,
and this is the comic relief. Don't fear the monster anymore, because he made some guy,
yeah,
a pervert that was trying to masturbate the Sears Roebuck catalog, shit his pants, and everyone's in stitches. La-di-da-di-da.
Yeah, that was really, really incongruous.
Now, speaking of incongruous, I mean, they've seen the creature. They know it exists.
Yeah.
They have no evidence it exists.
No.
But Professor Lockhart, I mean, the man is a master of the scientific
method.
He's
indefatigable.
Yeah.
He just wants to go back and...
Yeah. And get more information.
Yes.
So the next thing he does is he interviews a sheriff's deputy to find out if this creature exists. The creature that he actually... was mono with, 2 feet away, shot with a trank dart. Does this creature exist? And the deputy tells him, he's like, well, I mean, nobody believes me, but I mean, there was this one time when I went fishing, and, you know, I came back, and as I was, you know, carrying my fish, you know, back, and...
Yeah, his fish got stolen
by
some creature.
And as it happens, there was a scene where the deputy is walking and he's attacked by what looks like a gigantic shag carpet, right?
Or a boa.
Yeah, exactly. Not a boa constrictor, feather boa.
Yeah, feather boa.
And this is the creature. So, I mean, it's strangely bizarre.
Lockhart is corroborating his research with conjecture.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he made the discovery, but now I want conjecture to actually prove what my discovery was. So, I mean...
Dr. Lockhart should not have been granted tenure from the University of Arkansas.
No, definitely not. And all of this leads to meeting up with Old Man Crenshaw.
Old Man Crenshaw.
Ironically named Old Man Crenshaw because he's about 10 years younger than Dr. Lockhart.
Yeah. And Old Man Crenshaw, I guess they find him because, I guess... tales of his knowledge of the swamps precede him, and why they need to talk to him is unexplained as well. Like they need another person to corroborate his tales. They go out in a boat, find Old Man Crenshaw, and Old Man Crenshaw is not old, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
He is gigantic, hirsute, extremely fat, wearing overalls with one shoulder,
one suspender,
and it's got this protruding mass of a gut.
Yeah,
he got this ridiculous beard. He looks
kind of like 80s Mr. Hillbilly Jim.
Yeah.
He's got this weird headband. It looks like a
gold headband,
and he's
like
filthy,
Olivia Newton-John,
and he's disgusting. Mm-hmm. And and then of course, you know, when they meet Old Man Crenshaw, you know. Tim has to doff his shirt yet again, but they find out that the Old Man Crenshaw has a few secrets.
He does.
Yeah.
And they are wary of him, but they probe him with questions about what he's seen and what he's heard. He says, he's seen similar beasts in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And they get further evidence of this because he actually has one of these creatures sequestered in his... I guess in some pen in the back, because he's a keeper of goats in the middle of the swamp. So he's got the offspring of the Boggy Creek creature in his charge and that he's confined.
And we got to say that at this point, the offspring is ailing. He's ill. I mean, this reminds me of E.T., you know, at the end when poor E.T. is, you know, lying. Oh my God, that scene traumatized me as a child.
Yes,
I didn't want to talk about it, but anyway. So it's like we gotta get into a doctor. We gotta take a look at that. What are we gonna do?
And then that's where this turns into King Kong, because the researchers become, it's like a Stockholm syndrome where they're sympathetic to this beast that they're trying to study, and they want to preserve its life, whereas Old Man Crenshaw wants to shoot this thing, as one would, because it's terrifying and sinister. But they want, I guess, in the interests of science, maybe, you know, bring it back to the Smithsonian. I don't know what they want to do, bring it back to the lab. When Crenshaw tries to shoot it, they intervene, again, with this incredibly limp-wristed pistol that he's trying to shoot at him. He said, don't, like, spare the creature.
Yeah.
And then
we get, you know, like, I guess, mother and child reunion, so to speak, but it's father
and child. Yeah, father and child, yeah.
Because then we get Pear, Boggy Creek Monster, and he comes to collect his offspring.
Which looks like, again, a feather boa, and then it becomes, just another creature in a gorilla suit, and they march off into the woods. And
which leads us to the... to
Denouement.
Crenshaw, Denouement, yeah, mm-hmm. What does he say? He goes... Something along the lines of...
That creature done belong here.
He done belong in the wild.
Yeah, in the wild. We have no business messing with him, or whatever. And then a ridiculous...
Credits.
Roll credits and a ridiculous voiceover in which they, you know, they express this sort of weird environmental stewardship sentiment of, like, this place is best left unspoiled. And sort of like the Florida Everglades, we are not meant to be here. We should leave this sort of pristine pastoral wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, as the credits are rolling, they actually give a shout out to Shady Pines Trailer Park Homes, which just underscores the charm and the good natured backwoods welcoming nature of this movie.
Yeah,
it's just a charming kind of fun movie.
And
just a monster
rolling,
creature feature.
We sort of see, the Bog Creek Monster and his son walking off like, you know,
hand in hand
like Andy of Mayberry, you know, like Ron Howard and what's that guy? The guy played Matlock. What's his name?
Yeah, I forget. Yeah.
Andy Griffith.
Andy
walking,
Griffith.
You know?
There we go. Yeah.
He might as well be whistling the tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this thing is just very weird.
Very weird.
Just, yeah.
Now,
nature documentary.
I must, does it deserve to be vilified? Does it deserve to be in the bottom 100 of IMDb, you know, 2.2 out of 10?
No.
No.
Definitely not.
It does not.
There's way more cynically devised, focus group tested, big budget, shitty action movies, or something just ridiculous to just cash in on the success of a TV series. I'm thinking Sex and the City or Entourage,
right.
Just really bad. Mm-hmm. This thing
or
is
like
not
a toy line, like G.I. Joe or Transformers.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. This thing is not without its charms.
Charms.
It has
the
rabid dog shocked me.
Yeah.
The
wonky science.
The dough pulled under. Yeah, The dough pulled under the water was really quite harrowing.
Dough.
A deer. A female deer. Yeah. This was interesting. And I'm buoyed, psyched to track down
the original.
The original.
Legend
yeah,
of
for
Bob
sure.
Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, this movie is. It's a good. Decent movie. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 5, Path and Rain System. One it being a must miss, 5 being a must see.
A solid 3.
Three. It's a 3. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it was good. Yeah,
yeah.
What did you learn from this movie? I'll tell you what I learned. You cannot be an anthropology professor at university unless you're adept at a shotgun. We've seen this in many movies, whether you're an archaeology professor, Indiana Jones, or, you know, you got to have combat skills in order to be a professor at university.
I learned
thank
that.
Thank God I only teach at a college, because I have no combat skills whatsoever.
Yeah, I learned that anthropology professors are disproportionately represented in horror films. There is never a professor of classical studies or economics or biochemistry involved in these films. It's always the anthropologist who has
women's studies. Women's studies.
Oh, okay.
South African literature.
Yeah, indeed. You get, like, you find a mysterious crate. Invariably, the anthropologist is sent to investigate, and nothing good ever happens when that happens.
Yeah.
But what is good that always happens is our reviews and wonderful giveaways at www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we shall talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.